Hey everyone, welcome to the Shared Experience Podcast. Today we have Jeremy Jones. He's coming from us from Alpha Gamma Chapter at the University of Oklahoma, where he continued to be a three-time participant in the Journey of Hope with continued service to the ability experience over the past two decades. Jeremy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Zorth. It's a pleasure.
And here we also have Gary Sugg joining us as well.
Hey, Zorth. Hey, Jeremy. Glad to be here. Thank you both.
Heard that you have an interesting story of how you joined Pi Kappa Phi and how it was approached to you. So would you like to share your story for that?
Happy to relive it. It was, let's go back some, 27 years, summer of 96. I was a recent high school graduate. And I guess at some point I had checked a box during my university application to the University of Oklahoma that I was interested in the Greek system. I'll be honest, I'm not sure I knew exactly what that meant. Neither of my parents were Greek, but it sounded like a good opportunity. And frankly, you may find a theme throughout my life. My parents encouraged me to just take chances, take adventures, and see where they lead you. And so I did. That was early on. Took an adventure and selected to pursue interest in the Greek community. So I guess when I checked that box, people started showing up literally at our door in Tulsa, Oklahoma, as part of the Rush Committee. So, you know, Rush is a little bit different at different schools, but it all starts the summer before your freshman year in Oklahoma. So I agreed to meet these two gentlemen. They came in, they shook my parents' hands. They were the Rush chairs. I didn't know what that meant at the time, but they started talking about Pi Kappa Phi fraternity. And they were talking about something at the time, it was called Push America, but what would evolve into what we know now as the Ability Experience. And all that was well and good. I was interested. They kind of looked like all the other Rush chairs I met from other fraternities. They kind of had a similar story. But then I do remember vividly, they threw a brochure on the table about the fraternity, and there was a bicycle on the front. And from an early age, I mean, most all of us ride bikes as kids, right? But I'm one of those few who just never stopped riding, even through middle school and even when I got a car. Just loved the bicycle and the freedom and the opportunity that it presents. And I'd always had a dream of riding my bike across the country. So these guys said, oh, we do this. We have an event that's part of this charity that allows participants to ride their bikes across the country. And then they went on with some details about advocacy for people with disabilities and raising money. I tuned out at that point. Honestly, I was a pretty naive, immature 18-year-old, but I was interested. I was hooked. And so when I got to campus, I did fully explore all of the other fraternities. It's a great Greek system. But I kept coming back to Pi Kappa Phi, not only for that experience, but also just the quality of men that I met. Really clicked with them, and there was definitely this X factor in this thing called the Journey of Hope. And so from an early stage, I was interested. People didn't do it typically after their freshman year back then, but I had my eyesight early on. In the summer after my sophomore year, I wanted to participate in the Journey of Hope and started making inroads toward it and got my feet wet in the Ability Experience, and it's been pivotal for the rest of my life.
And that was 1998 for the North Route was your first kickoff.
It was, like it was yesterday.
Was that when they still had North and South together?
We did. We spent a week together. So we went to San Francisco. I think we did 3 or 4 days, training camp, bonding. I roomed with a South Route guy. We rode Kirkwood together and then separated the next day, if I recall correctly. So, yeah. That was back in the 90s. That's how we did it.
Yeah, the times have changed from that time period to where we're at now and what we're heading towards if you're following the direction of how we want the Journey of Hopes to kind of start looking like. Mm-hmm. And then you came back in 2001 for South?
I did. I will say the 98 North Route, it was special, my first opportunity, and I really truly believed at the time that it was a once in a lifetime opportunity. For most people, it is. And that's the way I expressed it, you know, when I was fundraising, once in a lifetime opportunity. That was after my sophomore year. I took a victory lap in undergrad. So after 5 years, though, I started eyeing what I was going to do right after graduation. I was fortunate in that I had a full-time job offer lined up following graduation, but the Journey of Hope was a dream, and I'd heard about some people who been able to go back and do it again. And so I had the audacity back then to ask my employer to push back my start date a few months. They agreed. And so it gave me the summer of 01 to live out my dream again and do the South route. At the time, there was simply the North and the South route. And I had a bit of a different perspective. I was matured a little bit, I thought. I was still 23 years old, but had an opportunity to help lead the team and also look at each day with a slightly different perspective. And that would continue to grow as I matured in my view of the experience. It continued to mature as well. So the 01 was another special, unique experience, unlike anything else.
I do have a question. Yeah. I know this topic comes up a pretty good amount nowadays with people wanting to do internships and unique experiences in college. Yeah. It sounds like you were able to get both of them before really joining the adult world. Was internship something that you kind of navigated through, or was it kind of in adjacent to, because you had a job offer ready for you?
Yeah. And so fortunately with going 5 years, it gave me several other summers to work and have an active internship. And so between freshman and sophomore year, like a lot of people, I just worked like a dog. I waited tables, I mowed lawns, I, banked whatever cash I could. Got through sophomore year and junior year, did the same thing. But actually that summer between my, we'll call it my fourth and fifth years, my senior and super senior year, I did have a more traditional banking internship. I am in the banking industry now. That did serve me well in terms of preparing me both financially and from an education and experience standpoint to solidify that full-time offer. And I know that's a challenge for many. How do you afford, an entire summer to dedicate to an event like this where you're not making money, you're actually even investing in something? But I will say it took some sacrifice, it took some planning. But for me, I was very fortunate and things lined up and I was able to participate. You're right. Two incredible summers before the real world even kicked off for me.
And then how did you come back after being in the adult world and then PMing for a new route?
So that is one I truly did not plan for or ever even hope or dream.
Get the call again?
The call again, exactly. Come, out of retirement or whatever you want to call back. But I am. So I did. I worked full time for 6 years after graduation. So call it ages 23 to 29. And I worked actually in the energy industry and for a rental car company, both in finance, corporate finance, progressed in my career. But it was incredibly fortunate to have the opportunity to go to grad school full time. I had an incredible manager and mentor who encouraged me to apply to top schools, go full time, make the investment again, similar to what I'd done in previous summers. And so I pursued an MBA at a school for 2 years. And it was in the middle of those 2 years. So that was the summer of 09. No, excuse me, 08. I'm doing the math here. It's been a while. But 08 was actually the 10-year anniversary of our 98 North team. And we had a 10-year anniversary event in Colorado. So I actually traveled. I was in Boston interning with the bank again. But I took a few days, flew out to Colorado, joined a dozen of my old teammates. And we did 3 days of riding together and just being together in fellowship and rehashing old stories. And there was a very critical person in my life. His name is Basil Liberg. You may know him as CEO of the Ability Experience. I know him as that guy I rode across the country with back in 98 on the North team. So we were teammates, great friends, still are. And we were riding together up a mountain. I think we were going up Berthoud Pass in Colorado, just talking about life, the 10 years that had passed, where he was. He was at the Ability Experience at the time. I think he was leading team events. I was planning my next move in my career. And he said, what are you doing after graduation 1 year from now? And I said, well, hopefully if the plan goes right, all my networking and interviewing pays off and I land that dream job coming out of grad school. And, this time next year I'm working, in some great city for some great company. And he said, well, that sounds all well and good, but what you should really do before you do that is come back and manage Journey of Hope team. And I literally laughed in his face. That was a ludicrous idea. That was not part of the plan. But I tell you what, by the time I got over Berthoud Pass, that's all I could think about. And so there I was the next year. I was very fortunate. Again, I was able to line up a full-time job offer following my graduation from grad school in 2009. And again, I had the young audacity to ask for an extension of my start date, which really in the world of corporate America, I'll just say from, you know, now I'm a hiring manager, if you find the right person, asking for a few months to push back your start date is not that big an ask. I was basically asking to start in September instead of June, 2009. And I had a good story too. I said, and I want to participate in this incredible cause called the Journey of Hope, advocating for people with disabilities. And so my employer agreed, and there I was, graduated from grad school, knowing that I had another incredible summer ahead of me, but in an incredibly different capacity and incredibly different experience. I had had the fortune as a cyclist, not once but twice, to have that road literally paved in front of me by the crew member, people filling up my water bottles and paving the way, making the road safe, working with sponsors to line up events and meals and incredible friendship visits, experiences. And suddenly I had the opportunity to provide that to other cyclists and crew members as a project manager. And a bit, at least at the time, it was a very unconventional project manager at the time. I was 31, you know, a decade out of college, a decade older than most of my teammates. And so I came in and was able to manage the team. And the third route had been added. There was a Transamerica route at the time. So we went from Seattle to DC and was able to be a part of that team, different capacity with different motivations, a different maturity level. We traveled through Missoula, Montana and met my nieces, who affectionately called me Uncle Germ. And so you better believe from that day forth, the entire team called me Uncle Germ, which I just, it still warms my heart to this day to hear Uncle Germ from my nieces or my teammates. But I was the old man on the team, and we got across that country safely. And I'll tell you guys, I mean, I love riding the bike. I still love riding the bike. But it gives me chills just right now to think about that arrival in DC on my third route as a project manager, the pride I had in those guys, that team, rivals any other experience that I've had, even on the bike. So that was a special one that I will never take for granted.
Yeah, those experiences are sure impactful. And I'm sure, I mean, even with the 98 team, do you still keep close contact with all your teammates?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So we actually have our 25-year anniversary. It was this summer, and I remember when Zoom kicked off, one of the first, when COVID first landed upon us, I remember, spring, summer of 2020, a lot of people were using Zoom in new ways to reconnect with old people. And literally one of the first Zoom calls I had was with my 98 Journey of Hope team. And I have a unique bond with that team, unlike maybe any other Journey of Hope team or sports team or work team that I've ever been a part of. So the years fly by, but you know, it's still a great group of guys, and we're in a different phase of life, but we can still live life together and support one another. And we're in all different cities and time zones, and we still make an effort to see each other when we can and support each other whenever we can.
I could be wrong here, but I think I'm the one that set up that Zoom call. Like, I was on staff.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding?
Yeah, and I remember I would typically get on the Zoom call and give like a 5-minute, 10-minute update about the organization.
Yes,
but it was much more about, you know, everyone being able to see each other and get in a room. But I remember thinking it was like that day, and I was like, Basil, you're on this team. You mind taking this one? So I didn't pop on that one. But
oh my gosh.
But I am glad to hear that. That was, you know, I, and for those that know my position, when I was with the Ability Experience, I was a development officer. So I would travel around, typically just meet with alumni and things like that. And so when COVID happened, I couldn't travel, and I had to figure out some ways to keep people engaged. So it's just funny that I hear that a couple of years later. It's good feedback.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you for setting up. I remember it vividly. I believe it was May 21st of 2020, because I was at my in-law's house, and it was my mother-in-law's 70th birthday. Happy birthday, AD. So thank you.
Awesome.
I do want to talk about how kind of you're at now and some of the things that you do kind of on your day-to-day. And I know you kind of reflect a lot on service. So did a lot of the service that you do now in your private life stem from some of the Ability Experience work you did early on?
It truly does. And as I was preparing for this call and just corresponding with you guys, yeah, it led me to reflect on a lot of things in my life. I'm in a very different stage right now than I was, you know, all those years ago, participating in those Journey of Hope events. I'm 45 years old, happily married. I've got two beautiful little girls. You know, but I've got a mortgage and a minivan, and you know, time is fleeting, and resources are spoken for before they're even gained sometimes. But even, you know, today's Sunday, and just a beautiful morning at church. My wife, my girls, and I, we serve on the greeting committee. It's there, you know, like any organization or church, it takes a village to make things run and to serve others. And there are so many different ways that you can serve. And one way that we just found that we enjoy serving is on the greeting committee. So if you've ever visited a church for the first time, hopefully you were greeted by someone friendly who welcomed you in. Into the body of believers, and literally into the building. So, you know, I think about, you know, would I have been on the greeting committee this morning if not for the ability experience? Maybe, but the ability experience is absolutely one of the key elements that has just led my life into a just almost an expectation of service, because I understand the value and the rewards that you get out of it. I think about, you know, I'm 45, so it's fine. I feel more like I'm in midlife right now than I did when I was 40. A lot of people hit 40 and they talk about midlife crisis, all that. I didn't really feel it, but when I hit 45, okay, the odds are actually that I'm somewhere near the midpoint. And I even read a book recently called The Halftime. My father-in-law gave it to me. It's a great book for reflecting on what you've done, where you are, and where you hope to be in the years to come. And I think about, you know, those pivotal, you know, milestones in life, the journey of hope, the ability experience, really shaped my understanding of the world and what makes it tick and the people in it. And it takes all kinds, and it takes service, and I understand the reward that you get out of it. You don't get out what you put in, you get more out of life than what you put in. But the more you put in, I'll tell you what, the more rewarding it is. So I would not be the same person today if I had not participated in those ability experience events. I can guarantee you that.
And you continue to still kind of do events when you can too, ride-alongs, challenge events, but also, like, was the walk across Spain, was that El Camino path that you did?
Yes, ¿conoces El Camino?
Sí, we did. I'm familiar with it, yeah.
Yes, so... So like I said, you know, my parents and others inspired me to seek adventure, take full advantage of time in this life, make the most of it. And I did have the fortune and the opportunity to walk across Spain. It is El Camino de Santiago, for those not familiar with it. It is a literally millennia-old pilgrimage from France to the tomb of the Apostle James. Santiago in Spanish, which is in northwest Spain. So you're basically walking from France to almost Portugal. It's about 500 miles, 800 kilometers. And I had the fortune during college years, I studied abroad for one semester in Madrid, loved the Spanish culture, learned about the Camino, thought maybe one day I might have the opportunity. But frankly, that was actually not related to the ability experience. It was related to a layoff I was a part of. So yeah, that I graduated in 2009 from grad school. I told you, you know, seeking that dream job for the dream company. I got it. And it's not a story I share a lot, but 5 months into it, I got laid off. I got displaced along with my best friend and three of my other classmates on the same day. And it did come up as a bit of a shock. Yeah.
Was that a part of the financial crisis? I mean, in 2009 is always what I always associate with that.
You're very kind. That was definitely part of it. You know, yeah. I was hired in 08 for a job that started in 09. The world did change. There was a recession. You may have read about it. And there was definitely, I was working for a consulting firm that had clients pull the plug for sure. So it was, you know, They definitely had to reduce staff, and I understand that need. But if you've ever been a part of a layoff or, you know, or been fired, you know, it's not a crime, but it is a punch in the gut. I'll tell you that much. So it was, you know, it was disappointing. I was pretty shook up, and it was not part of the plan. So, but what I did, the day I got laid off, let's see, I went to brunch immediately with my best friend. I went skydiving that day, and I called my dad, and
wow.
So it was a big day, but I said, you know, we'll see what tomorrow brings. And my dad said some really kind, encouraging words, and I'm grateful for that. And was able to lean on, you know, family and friends, and look for the next chapter. And the next chapter, thankfully, my parents were actually vacationing in Florida. I was living in Houston at the time. They were vacationing in the panhandle of Florida. So within a week, I hopped in the car with my bike and a backpack and went down there, and just, I hammered out some miles on the bike. I spent time with my family, you know, had some gin and tonics with my mom and dad, and pondered the next step. And the next step for me, I got online. I don't think Kayak was around yet, but I looked for cheap flight to Spain. I landed one, and just booked a one-way ticket to Spain. And next thing you know, I was doing the Camino. So the Camino is also, it's a month-long pilgrimage. Many people do it for different reasons. Some people are going through a major transition in life, a divorce, a layoff, loss of a loved one, something like that. And it's a time to truly travel, literally, very simply, from town to town, small villages. But there are, there's albergues, there's little hostels where you can stay. So you don't have to carry a full pack. But it allows you to meet people from around the world and just get lost in your thoughts, to read, to pray, to think about the next step. And the Camino afforded me that. I spent 32 days walking across Spain, thinking about my next step, but came back from that encouraged. I packed up and I moved to Colorado and you know, found a great job, found an amazing woman, and the rest is history. So that was the walk across Spain. Highly, highly encourage everybody, if you have the opportunity, go walk across Spain.
Yeah, so the wedding that I was just recently at in France, his name's Mike McBride, congratulations to him, but we biked through Europe in 2017. So we actually did part of the Camino from Santiago de Compostela up towards France. So we actually backlogged it. And so all those little places that you said, we had visited those, and man, we ate so well. They're so accommodating. You meet so many people of all different, like it was Spain, Italy, and France that band together to be able to provide water, like clean water sources, and just safe passageway through all that. And like, those were some of the great places we stayed. Carb load, great like people around, and awesome, like the people who owned all the spots were just so awesome.
I'm so thrilled that you experienced that. It's living simply but beautifully. Some small villages are really just a few families, but they'll offer you, you know, at least when I did it, a bed and some warm soup and a glass of wine, you know, for like 10 euro or whatever it was at the time. Living simply, but sitting around the table, speaking with people from around the world, different places in their lives, you come back with a different perspective for sure.
And it happened to be a great time for you. I kind of have the same misfortune of similarities between a layoff that happened to me earlier this year based on like this looming recession that's coming in. I do architecture, so we're always at the subject to the economy. But my moment for that was actually kickstarting Seattle. And so being with the team and doing some of the friendship visits, and it really got my head straight. So that was like the perfect timing for you to do what you needed to do and rebrand yourself as what you wanted to kind of do and be. That's awesome.
It warms my heart. I'm thrilled you found that too, and I pray for your next step. It's exciting.
Yeah, I think it's just easier when you're like giving back to someone, and you realize like even in the misfortune of a loss of a job or, you know, whatever trauma came of that, like we really don't have it all that bad. And to help someone else go through something, I mean, I remember some of my, you know, my Pi Alpha experiences from when I did Journey of Hope South Route in 2012. I'm sure you have some stories that you can pull out of your hat like on a whim, but yeah, those things just carry me alive on days that I'm, you know, struggling or alone or just, you know, lost in thought. I think you have one specifically from Alabama, the Birmingham. It was a miracle league, and I actually think we went through that one too. I was trying to remember of, I think it was, it had to have been the same miracle league, but yeah, what was yours one like? Because that miracle league for me really shaped the perspective of baseball, like, and how I viewed it. Because at the time, I didn't really think too much of it, to be completely honest.
Miracle, I'll be honest, I'm not sure I know what miracle league was. Maybe that was the organization we were with. We were at a minor league Barons game with an organization. I don't recall exactly if it was a local UCP or an ARC or something. What is the miracle league, if I may ask?
Well, I guess the Miracle League is just kind of, you're playing baseball with a bunch of people with disabilities, and you kind of buddy up with someone who, either if they need assistance or anything like that, or just kind of monitoring their efforts and just playing kind of t-ball in an open field, and it's just super fun and lots of energy, and it's very eccentric. And yeah, so you were actually at a game.
Well, and we may have done something similar. We were at an Easter Seals camp in Empire, Colorado, and played, call it modified baseball, where we ran around the bases on, you know, on all fours, bear crawling, to kind of literally level the playing field and that kind of thing. But allowed everybody to truly participate and contribute and play without having to be like the best athlete. The story that I was citing was just a shift for me. It was in Birmingham, Alabama. We went to a Barons game. I think it's a AAA baseball team. Fun fact, it's the team that Michael Jordan briefly played for during his his first retirement from the Bulls. But
remember
we were
that
there.
Space Jam.
You got it. Good reference. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but we were there with an organization that had brought some clients, and I don't recall exactly what it was. Like you said, maybe United Cerebral Palsy or NERC or something of that nature. But we were kind of paired up with, a client for the evening to be their buddy, you know, just socially. But I was asked by a gentleman in a wheelchair. I was able to, he had difficulty communicating, but I was able to understand that he needed to go to the restroom and needed help. And I thought, absolutely, you know, put my Coke down and wheeled him off to the bathroom. Was prepared to just, you know, help usher him in, help him take care of business, and then usher him back to the seats. But it really, it changed for me in that moment, in that he was trying to communicate something to me several times before I realized, no, he needed help physically going into the stall and actually using the facilities. Something that most of us take for granted every single day. And I was able to help him, something he has to rely on people for every single day. This individual has to rely on people to help bathe him, to clothe him, and to help him use the restroom. Something, it literally in that moment, and even right now as I'm retelling, it just makes me slow everything down. And yes, you know, never take for granted the things that we can do. Just here, I'm standing here, I'm communicating with you. I woke up this morning, you know, I have an able body, but not everybody has that luxury and that fortune. And I was able to help him. And we made it back to the game, watched several more innings together. But it just changed my perspective on what we say we're doing. When we say we advocate for people with disabilities, do we really mean that? And I had to question, did I really mean that? My first entire journey of hope, and all those miles I logged in 01 up to Birmingham, did I really believe and buy into this truth that there are people that truly need services, need resources, and need people to live the life that they deserve? And in that moment, it just shifted my perspective, and again, it kind of led me to this life of pursuing a service and living a full life, including that. Because I know there will, you know, come days and hours where I will rely on other people for probably very, very basic things. You know, it may not be for many years, but that was life-changing for me.
Is that kind of an interest that brought you to, I think it's F3, right?
F3, yes.
Is that what got you interested in helping the youth, because you wanted them to kind of understand and kind of appreciate life young on?
You know, F3, I'll be very frank, total selfishness and loneliness brought me to F3, because I'll just fast forward a few years and another, you know, life throws you some curveballs and life changes and love will do funny things. I told you I got laid off from my job in Houston, but frankly, I was in a bit of a dead-end job in a dead-end town, in a dead-end relationship. So none of these things were really suitable long-term. And this layoff that I experienced kind of forced my hand to make a major life shift. And I moved to Colorado. I grew up in Oklahoma, vacationed in Colorado growing up. My two sisters and I, the way I remember it, all promised each other that one day we would all live in Colorado together. So I got there. That was always a destination. I got there without a job, was fortunate, was able to land a job. My two sisters missed the mark. They overshot the mark, went to Montana and Oregon. God bless them. I still love them, but they went too far. And now I'm not in Colorado either. But when I got to Colorado, you know, I met the love of my life, was married a minute later, had two daughters 5 minutes later. And but my wife is a sweet Southern belle. She grew up in the South. All of her amazing family is scattered, call it along the Appalachian corridor. So we knew long term, all in, all things considered, we wanted to be in the South and near family, especially with young children. And so we started making plans, and the bank I was working for at the time was building an office in Charlotte. It was a great opportunity. They were willing to move our family to Charlotte, North Carolina. And so that was our opportunity. If we were ever going to make this major life shift, that was it. Took this job, we made the corporate move, and I moved to Charlotte, which is a fine city, and spent several years there and made a tremendous number of friends. But I didn't know anybody when I got there. I knew Basil and another Chris Farrell, and Chris Flohouse. So 398 North JOH teammates. You asked if we still stayed in touch. By golly, yes. They were the only three people I knew in Charlotte when I moved there. Reached out to them, and they're fantastic and very welcoming, but they have busy lives as well. So I did not have a great network and community around me just personally. And that's when I learned about this thing called F3. So if you're not familiar with F3, it stands for faith, fitness, and fellowship, which are all three things I'm very passionate about. It was essentially started about 10 years ago by two middle-aged men in Charlotte, North Carolina, to offer free outdoor boot camp workouts to men of all ages, race, color, and creed, to make a welcoming place for people to come together early in the morning, work out together, push themselves, make them better physically, but beyond that, to have the fellowship aspect, to have friendships, to be able to lean on one another, and then the faith aspect, to be able to believe in something bigger than yourself and to serve others in whatever capacity that is, whether that's at your church, at the local food bank, whether it's just helping brothers out. Someone needs to move their mother-in-law. You can get six guys together and make, easy work of it. So that's what F3 is. It has exploded into, I believe, a couple hundred cities, literally, I think, five continents now, quarter million guys, wow, just like us, living their lives. Most are married with kids, a mortgage, and a minivan, but still desire friendship, male friendship, bonding, support around them that a lot of middle-aged guys just don't find. So that's how I found it. I was selfish. I needed friends, and I'd heard about this thing called F3, so I just showed up. Most guys are called headlocked by someone else and brought to a workout, but we typically work out very early in the morning. We push each other. It's always free. It's always peer-led. We always end in a circle of trust, usually ends in a prayer, and we're a community that supports one another, supports each other's children, and looks for ways to serve, very similar to the Pi Alpha community, looking for ways to serve others, including youth with disabilities, but you can expand that to any realm of need that you can find.
And Charlotte has still a pretty big gathering of Pi Alphas and Pi Caps too. They do a lot of meetups. I mean, I think Diego also runs a lot of meetups. I'll have to make sure you're on the list for those if you have the capacity in your busy life to do some of those meetups.
I'd love to.
So you're still active on the bike?
I am. The bike took a bit of a backseat when my girls were born. My girls are six, well, they will tell you, they're 6.5 and 9.5. Don't discount the halves. But I love cycling, especially in Colorado. Loved it out there. But as it's a little challenging sometimes. Cycling is dependent largely by, daylight and weather to some extent. And so, and sometimes can require a number of hours if you want to compete at a certain level. So my road bike did sit, covered up in the basement for a couple of years, and I focused on running and other things, and just focused on family. Honestly, I wasn't exercising. I wasn't hanging out with other guys. I was biking to work, but that was about it. Really focused on young family, and then I kind of dusted it off a few years ago, I moved to a smaller town in Western North Carolina about 3 years ago, in the height of COVID, with some beautiful rolling hills and opportunity to ride and great community. And the girls a little older. And frankly, my wife and I, we sat down, I feel like it was a New Year's a few years ago, and we decided, okay, it's time for us each to carve out a little more time for ourselves individually so that we can just continue to charge our own batteries and be better for each other. We'd focus so much on the girls for so many years. They can actually bathe themselves and clothe themselves to some extent now. It's time. So frankly, I started cycling one night a week with the guys here. She started dancing with some other moms one night a week. But that allowed me to get back on the bike. Actually got back, did another triathlon this spring. Hadn't done one of those in a long time. But also found another community. And that's what's just so important. Whether it's the Pi Alpha Society, whether it's F3, or your local cycling community, people you can be with, laugh with, push yourself against, and make yourself better. So back on the bike. I do love the bike above all, but running is easier to get in. You can do it
right
anywhere, anytime. You can do it before the sun rises. So that helps fill the gaps, and it's pretty good too.
A little off track here, but did you ever get into mountain biking, or do you do that at all?
It's embarrassing. You know what? I actually, literally right behind me is a world-class mountain bike park with 8 miles of trail, Rocky Knob.
Rocky Knob, yeah. It's part of why I asked, yeah.
It's embarrassing. I back up right to it. You know, I've been to Rocky Knob probably 20 times, but only for the playground.
Right.
And it's a great picnic table. So we go, we'll have a picnic, and the girls will play with the girls on the playground, but I haven't actually biked the trails. Don't tell anybody. It's embarrassing.
No, it's okay. I keep trying to get more ABEX people into mountain biking because I actually don't road bike. I just mountain bike. And my wife and I will go up there. We have an 18-month-old, and she can play with him on the playground for a little bit while I get a quick workout before we just go to breweries all day. So one of the things we always like to talk about in these episodes is, and it's not necessarily the reason we have these episodes, but there's a facet to it of trying to inspire our, you know, collegiate men that are listening to this right now to maybe that want to do Journey of Hope or any of our, you know, our events, our Gear Up Florida down in Florida. But it's funny, once we get to this point in the podcast, I think you've already sold it. I mean, it's hard for me to sit here and ask you to like name a thing or that you attribute your success to, you know, that you could pull out from the journey, your Journey of Hope experiences, because that's what you've done over the last 35 minutes, not intentionally. But when you think back on your three experiences, you say they're vastly different. And I say three experiences, that's Journey of Hope. I know you've done plenty more with the organization and continue to do more. What do you look back and think on? You kind of covered this, but you know, what's one thing you pull out and realize that, hey, this would not have happened if not for the Journey of Hope?
Oh man, it set me on a course in so many ways. I mean, one, physically, that's kind of the easy, more superficial, but not in a bad way, aspect. I was a part of a team unlike I'd been. I actually wasn't an athlete growing up. I was in band, you know, all through high school. Never really played a lot of organized sports, didn't compete much. But I really thrived on the bike. I loved it. And I loved hammering with guys, but also casually talking. There's the physical aspect, being a part of the team, being able to push yourself, learning what else is out there. There's the adventure part, right? So I think, you know, between the three, I've covered about 40 states just on the Journey of Hope, which, you know, I'm blessed to be able to say that. A lot of people my age can't say that just even in their personal travels. Seeing the world, it only whets your appetite to see more. You know, that's led me to, you know, I've been to six continents now. A lot of that, I was inspired by the Journey of Hope. You see the different ways people live. You see the mountains are different. The oceans are different. You want more, and it inspires you to seek more. So there's the physical part. There's the adventure part. And then there's just the rewarding service aspect that I've perhaps, you know, gone too far into. But it's led me, it's inspired me, meeting incredible, incredible people like, you know, Bruce Rogers and Chad Coltrane, you know, former CEO of the Ability Experience, you know, that lead me to, you know, a life of, you know, successful business, what that looks like in terms of and managing successful business and family, being a great family, being a great dad and a husband. I've seen a lot of mentors along the route as part of the organization, and also, you know, sponsors, you know, Roadrunner Club members. That inspired me to seek that in life, and so much more. But I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that's well said.
Yeah, I was gonna say, in that, do you have anything to say for anyone who's like on the fence about joining a team, or any last guidance to get them kicked over?
Yeah, do it. You will not regret it. I remember Chad Coltrane talking. He could talk down any excuse. Now there will always be, you know, extenuating circumstance, and I don't want to, you know, pretend to know someone's personal situation. There will always be potential priorities that may, you know, supersede, you know, a summer adventure like this. But I can tell you from, you know, an education standpoint, an investment standpoint, an experience standpoint, you know, life is short, and the summer is so much shorter. And so it is the blink of an eye. But there is so much to gain. You know, I work in finance as well, as many of you, and we talk about risk reward. You know, the reward is infinite and the risk is negligible, to taking an experience like this. Yeah.
And I also know, just through personal stories and my involvement with staff as a cycling coach, that a lot of people, if they do have any kind of home situations, that all they have to do is kind of reach up to staff and have that communication. And I know that staff's always been so accommodating with anyone, just to kind of ensure that they, you know, get their experience in and that they're able to join a team. And there's nothing like a life event to make you not allow you to do it. They really try to help you out with as many resources as they can give you. Because we all want all the, you know, as many pie caps can do this, we want everyone to do it. This is such a beautiful experience that's not, it's not a common opportunity to have.
Yep. Hardest part is signing up, and then take it from someone who did it after their freshman year. We don't see that very often. It's not easy to take that leap of faith.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, is there anything else that you would like to say about anything upcoming in your life, or anything that you're excited for going forward?
You know, there will always be the next chapter and the next adventure. I would encourage everybody, you know, whatever that is. And sometimes, you know, if you've got a demanding job and young children and diapers, like, that is your priority. And that is the calling of where you should serve right now. And life will have ups and downs and different phases of comfort and phases of busyness. And if you're in the midst of the busyness, you know, focus your priorities there. You know, whether that's, you know, your kids, focus on your wife. If your parents need help, focus that. But the moment you get margin, set yourself a goal, you know, work towards something. I work best when I've got something in front of me that's, you know, within my career, you know, a big project that inspires me to move forward with my girls. You know, some big semester event or some big dance performance that inspires me to move toward that. I typically have a big race on my calendar. So I've got a marathon here in 6 weeks. I'm working toward that. It helps get me up in the morning. It helps me just personally, getting physically exhausted first thing in the morning. It helps get my mind right. Being with other guys, in the gloom, as we say in F3, gets my mind right. But also there are many other goals. I have aspirations of writing a children's book one day. You know, that can be pushed out a little bit further, but I want that too. It helps to have something in front of you, whatever that goal is, to make you the best version of yourself and to keep you motivated and to be the person that your family and your community and friends wants to be around. So I encourage you, if you don't have something, set your sights high too. Don't sell yourself short. Sky's the limit. You may fail, but you probably won't.
Wise words, Jeremy. And yeah, thank you for all your time for that. I love the stories. I can't wait for other people to hear it and reconnect with you and have all your friends from all the years text you and be like, ah, just be all in excitement with you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this, Jeremy. We really appreciate it. And it's great to hear your story and just, all the exciting stuff you've got yet to come.
Well, thank you both, Gary, Zorth. I can't thank you enough for the work that you put in for the cause, and I thank you for the time. Thank you for listening.
Thanks. All right, bye, everyone. Well, until next episode.